They are called allomantic savants, men or women who flare their metals so long and so hard that the constant influx of allomantic power transforms their very physiology. In most cases, with most metals, the effects of this are very slight. Bronze burners, for instance, often become bronze savants without knowing it. Their range is expanded from burning the metal so long. Becoming a pewter savant is dangerous, as it requires pushing the body so hard in a state where one cannot feel exhaustion or pain. Most accidentally kill themselves before the process is complete. And in my opinion, the benefit isn't worth the effort. Tin savants, however, now, they are something special. Endowed with senses beyond what any normal allomancer would need or even want, they become slaves to what they touch, hear, see, smell, and taste. Yet the abnormal power of these senses gives them a distinct and interesting advantage. One could argue that, like an inquisitor who has been transformed by a hemorrhagic spike, the allomantic savant is no longer even human. 16. Spook awoke to darkness. That was happening less and less frequently lately. He could feel the blindfold on his face, tied tightly across his eyes and over his ears. It dug into his overly sensitive skin, but it was far better than the alternative. Starlight was as bright as the sun to his eyes, and footsteps in the hallway outside his room could sound like thunderclaps. Even with the thick cloth, even with his ears plugged with wax, even with the shutters drawn tight and hung with a cloth, it was sometimes hard for him to sleep. The muffling was dangerous. It left him vulnerable. And yet lack of sleep would be even more dangerous. Perhaps the things he'd done to his body by burning tin would kill him. Yet the more time he spent among the people of Urto, the more he felt they were going to need his help to survive the dangers that were coming. He needed an edge. He worried that he'd made the wrong decision, but at least he'd made a decision. He would continue as he had and hope that it was enough. He groaned quietly, sitting up, taking off the cloth and pulling the wax from his ears. The room was dark, but even the faint light creeping through the shutters, their gaps stuffed with cloth, was enough for him to see by. Tin flared comfortably in his stomach. His reserve was nearly gone, burned away during the night. His body now used it as instinctively as it drew breath or blinked. He had heard that thugs could burn pewter to heal their bodies even if they were unconscious from their wounds. The body understood what it needed. He reached into a small pail beside his bed, pulling out a small handful of tin dust. He'd brought a lot with him from Luthadel, and augmented this by buying more through the underground. Fortunately, tin was relatively cheap. He dumped his handful into a mug on his nightstand, then moved to the door. The room was small and cramped, but he didn't have to share it with anyone. That made it lavish by Ska standards. He squeezed his eyes shut, then pulled open the door. The luminosity of a sunlit hallway crashed against him. He gritted his teeth against the light, intense despite his shut eyelids, and felt about on the ground. He found the jug of fresh water, drawn from the well for him by the inn's servants, and pulled it inside, then shut the door. He blinked, walking across the room to fill his mug. He drank it, washing down the tin. It would be enough for the entire day. He took an extra handful and stuffed it into a pouch, just in case. A few minutes later, he was dressed and ready. He sat down on the bed, closing his eyes, preparing for the day. If the citizens' spies were to be believed, other members of Ellen's team were on their way to Urto. They were probably under orders to secure the storage cache and quell the rebellion. Spook would need to learn as much as he could before they arrived. He sat, going over plans, thinking to himself. He could feel feet thumping in the rooms around him. The wooden structure seemed to shake and tremble like some enormous hive filled with bustling workers. Outside, he could hear voices calling, yelling, speaking. Bells rang faintly. It was early yet, barely past noon, but the mists would be gone. Urteau got about 6 or 7 hours of mistless daylight, making it a place where crops could still grow and a man could still thrive. Normally, Spook would have slept through the hours of daylight. However, there were things he needed to do. He opened his eyes, then reached to his nightstand, picking up a pair of spectacles. They had been specially crafted, at his request, to hold lenses that made no corrections to his vision. They were just filled with regular glass. He put these on, then retied the cloth around his head, covering the front and sides of the lenses. Even with his heightened senses, he couldn't see through his own eyelids. However, with the spectacles on, he could open his eyes and wear the cloth at the same time. He felt his way to the window, then he pulled off the blanket and threw open the shutters. Hot, nearly scalding sunlight bathed him. The cloth bit into the skin of his head, but he could see. The cloth blocked just enough light to keep him from being blinded, yet was translucent enough to allow vision. It was like the mists, actually. The cloth was nearly invisible to him, for his eyes were enhanced beyond the point of reason. His mind just filtered out the cloth's interference. Spook nodded to himself, then picked up his dueling cane and made his way from the room. "I know you're a quiet one," Dern said, rapping softly on the ground in front of him with a pair of sticks. "But even you have to admit that this is better than living under the Lords." Spook sat in a street slot, back to the stone wall that had sustained the canal, head bowed slightly. Market Pit was the widest of the street slots of Urteau. Once it had been a waterway so broad that 3 boats abreast could moor in its center, while leaving room on both sides for the passage of others in either direction. Now it had become a central boulevard for the city, which also made it a prime location for tradesmen and beggars. Beggars like Spook and Dern. They sat at the very side of the slot, buildings looming like fortress walls above. Few of the passers paid any attention to the ragged men. Nobody paused to notice that one of them seemed to be watching the crowd carefully, despite the dark cloth over his eyes, while the other spoke far too articulately to have been educated in the gutter. Spook didn't respond to Dern's question. In his youth, the way he spoke, with a thick accent, language littered with slang, had marked him, made people dismiss him. Even now, he didn't have a glib tongue or charming manner like Kelsier's. So instead, Spook just tried to say as little as possible. Less chance of getting himself into trouble that way. Oddly, instead of finding him easier to dismiss when he didn't talk, it seemed that people paid more attention to him. Dern continued to pound out his rhythm like a street performer with no audience. It was too soft against the earthen floor for anyone to hear, unless one were Spook. Dern's rhythm was perfect. Any minstrel would have envied him. "I mean, look at the market," Dern continued. "Under the Lord Ruler, most ska could never engage openly in commerce. We have something beautiful here. Ska ruling ska. We're happy." Spook could see the market. It seemed to him that if the people were truly happy, they'd wear smiles rather than downcast looks. They'd be shopping and browsing rather than quickly picking out what they wanted, then moving on. Plus, if the city were the happy utopia it was supposed to be, there wouldn't be a need for the dozens of soldiers who watched the crowd. Spook shook his head. Everybody wore nearly the exact same clothing, colors and styles dictated by the citizens' orders. Even begging was heavily regulated. Men would soon arrive to count Spook's offerings, tally how much he had earned, then take the citizens' cut.
"Look," Dern said, "do you see anyone being beaten or killed on the street?
Surely that's worth a few strictures. The deaths happen in quiet alleyways now, Spook said softly. At least the Lord Ruler killed us openly. Dern frowned, sitting back, thumping the ground with his sticks. It was a complex pattern. Spook could feel the vibrations through the ground and found them soothing. Did the people know the talent they passed, quietly beating the ground they walked upon? Dern could have been a master musician. Unfortunately, under the Lord Ruler, Ska didn't play music. And under the citizen, well, it generally wasn't good to draw attention to yourself, no matter what the method. There it is, Dern said suddenly. As promised. Spook glanced up. Through the mutters, the sounds, the flashes of color, and the powerful sense of refuse people and goods for sale, Spook saw a group of prisoners being escorted by soldiers in brown. Sometimes the flood of sensation was almost overwhelming to him. However, as he'd once told Vin, burning tin wasn't about what one could sense, but about what one could ignore. And he had learned very well to focus on the senses he needed, shunting aside that which would distract. The market-goers made way for the group of soldiers and their prisoners. The people bowed their heads, watching solemnly. "You still want to follow?" Dern asked. Spook stood. Dern nodded, then stood and grabbed Spook by the shoulder. He knew that Spook could really see, or at least Spook assumed that Dern was observant enough to have noticed that fact. They both maintained the act, however. It was common among beggars to adopt a guise of being afflicted in an attempt to elicit more coins. Dern himself walked with a masterful false limp, and had his hair pulled out in sickly patches. Yet Spook could smell soap on the man's skin and fine wine on his breath. He was a thief lord. There were few more powerful in the city. Yet he was clever enough with his disguises that he could walk about on the streets unnoticed. They weren't the only ones following the soldiers and their prisoners. Ska, wearing the approved gray, trailed the group like ghosts, a quiet, shuffling mass in the falling ash. The soldiers walked to a ramp leading out of the street slots, guiding the people into a wealthier section of the town, where some of the canals had been filled in and cobbled. Soon the dead spots began to appear. Charred scars. Ruins that had once been homes. The smell of smoke was almost overpowering to Spook, and he had to start breathing through his mouth. They didn't have to walk very far before arriving at their destination. The citizen himself was in attendance. He rode no horse. Those had all been shipped to the farms, for only crass noblemen were too good to walk the ground on their own feet. He did, however, wear red. "What's that he's wearing?" Spook whispered as Dern led him around the side of the crowd. The citizen and his retinue stood on the steps of a particularly grand mansion, and the Ska were clustering around. Dern led Spook to a place where a group of toughs had muscled themselves an exclusive piece of the street with a good vantage of the citizen. They nodded to Dern, letting him pass without comment.
"What do you mean?" Dern asked. "The citizen is wearing what he always does, Ska trousers and a work shirt."
"They're red," Spook whispered. "That's not an approved color."
"As of this morning it is. Government officers can wear it. That way they stand out, and people in need can find them. Or at least, that's the official explanation."
Spook frowned. However, something else caught his attention. She was there. It was natural, of course. She accompanied her brother wherever he went. He was particularly worried for her safety and seldom let her out of his sight. She wore the same look as always, eyes sorrowful within a frame of auburn hair.
"Sad group today," Dern said, and at first Spook thought he was referring to Beldra.
However, Dern was nodding toward the group of prisoners. They looked just like the rest of the people in the city, Gray clothing, ash-stained faces, subservient postures. The citizen, however, stepped forward to explain the differences.
"One of the first proclamations this government made," he announced, "was one of solidarity. We are a Scar people. The noblemen chosen by the Lord Ruler oppressed us for 10 centuries. Erto, we decided, would become a place of freedom, a place like the survivor himself prophesied would come."
"You've got the count," Dern whispered to Spook. Spook nodded. 10, he said, counting the prisoners. "The ones we expected. You're not earning your coin, Dern. Watch."
"These," the citizen said,
bald scalp shining in the red sunlight as he pointed at the prisoners.
"These didn't heed our warning. They knew, as all of you know, that any nobleman who stayed in this city would forfeit his life. This is our will. All of our will. But like all of their kind, these were too arrogant to listen. They tried to hide, but they think themselves above us. They always will. That exposes them."
He paused, then spoke again.
"And that is why we do what we must."
He waved his soldiers forward. They shoved the prisoners up the steps. Spook could smell the oil on the air as the soldiers opened the house's doors and pushed the people in. Then the soldiers barred the door from the outside and took up a perimeter. Each soldier lit a torch and threw it on the building. It didn't take superhuman senses to feel the heat that soon blazed to life, and the crowd shied back, revolted and frightened, but fascinated. The windows had been boarded shut. Spook could see fingers trying to pry the wood free, could hear people screaming. He could hear them thumping against the locked door, trying to break their way out, crying in terror. He longed to do something. Yet, even with Tin, he couldn't fight an entire squad of soldiers on his own. Elland and Vin had sent him to gather information, not play their hand. Still, he cringed, calling himself a coward as he turned away from the burning building.
"They should not be," Spook whispered harshly.
"They're noblemen," Dern said.
"No, they aren't. Their parents might have been, but these were Scar. Normal people, Dern.
They have noble blood."
"So do we all, if you look back far enough," Spook said.
Dern shook his head.
"This is the way it has to be. This is the survivor."
"Do not speak his name in association with this barbarity," Spook hissed.
Dern was quiet for a moment.
"I know it's hard to see, and perhaps the citizen is too eager. But I heard him speak once. The survivor. This is the sort of thing he taught. Death to the nobleman, rule by the Scar. If you'd heard him, you'd understand. Sometimes you have to destroy something in order to build something better."
Spook closed his eyes. Heat from the fire seemed to be searing his skin. He had heard Kelsier speak to crowds of Ska, and Kelsier had said the things that Dern now referred to. Then the survivor had been a voice of hope, of spirit. His same words repeated now, however, became words of hatred and destruction. Spook felt sick.
"Again, Dern," he said, looking up, feeling particularly harsh. "I don't pay you to spout citizen propaganda at me. Tell me why I'm here, or you'll get no further coin from me."
The large beggar turned, meeting Spook's eyes behind the cloth.
"Count the skulls," he said quietly.
With that, Dern took his hand off Spook's shoulder and retreated into the crowd. Spook didn't follow. The scents of smoke and burning flesh were growing too powerful for him. He turned, pushing his way through the crowd, seeking fresh air. He stumbled up against a building, breathing deeply, feeling the rough grain of its wood press against his side. It seemed to him that the falling flakes of ash were a part of the pyre behind, bits of death cast upon the wind. He heard voices. Spook turned, noting that the citizen and his guards had moved away from the fire. Quellian was addressing the crowd, encouraging them to be vigilant. Spook watched for a time, and finally the crowd began to leave, trailing the citizen as he moved back toward the market pit. "He's punished them. Now he needs to bless them." Often, especially after executions, the citizen visited the people personally, moving between stalls in the market, shaking hands, and giving encouragement. Spook took off down a side street. He soon passed out of the wealthier section of town, arriving at a place where the street fell away before him. He chose a place where the retaining wall had collapsed, forming a slope down into the dry canal, then hopped down, skidding his way to the bottom. He pulled up the hood of his cloak, obscuring his covered eyes, and made his way through the busy street with the dexterity of one who had grown up as a street urchin. Even taking a more roundabout route, he arrived at Market Pit before the citizen and his retinue. Spook watched through the raining ash as the man moved down a broad ramp of earth, trailed by a following that numbered in the hundreds. "You want to be him," Spook thought, crouching beside a merchant's stall. "Kelsier died to bring this people hope, and now you think to steal his legacy." This man was no Kelsier. This man wasn't even worthy to utter the survivor's name. The citizen moved about, maintaining a paternal air, speaking to the people of the market. He touched them on the shoulders, shook hands, and smiled benevolently. "The survivor would be proud of you." Spook could hear his voice even over the noise of the crowd. "The ash that falls is a sign from him. It represents the fall of the empire, the ashes of tyranny. From those ashes we will make a new nation, one ruled by Scar." Spook edged forward, putting down the top of his hood and feeling before himself with his hands as if he were blind. He carried his dueling cane across his back, in a strap obscured by the folds of his baggy gray shirt. He was more than capable when it came to moving through crowds. While Vin had always worked hard to remain obscure and unseen, Spook had managed to achieve both things without ever trying. In fact, he'd often tried the opposite. He'd dreamed of being a man like Kelsier, for even before he'd met the survivor, Spook had heard stories of the man. The greatest Ska thief of their time, a man bold enough to try to rob the Lord Ruler himself. And yet, try as he might, Spook had never been able to distinguish himself. It was just too easy to ignore yet another ash-faced boy, especially if you couldn't understand his thick Eastern slang. It had taken actually meeting Kelsier, seeing how he could move people by talking, to finally convince Spook to abandon his dialect. That was when Spook had begun to understand that there was a power in words. Spook suddenly moved his way toward the front of the crowd, watching the citizen. He got jostled and shoved, but nobody cried out against him. A blind man who had gotten caught up in the press of people was easy to ignore, and what was ignored could get where it wasn't supposed to. With some careful positioning, Spook soon placed himself at the front of the group, barely an arm's length from the citizen. The man smelled of smoke.
"I understand, good woman," the citizen was saying as he held an elderly woman's hand. "But your grandson is needed where he is, working the fields. Without him and his kind, we would not be able to eat. A nation ruled by Ska also has to be one worked by Ska."
"But can't he come back, even for a bit?" the woman asked.
"In time, good woman," the citizen said. "In time." His crimson uniform made him the only splash of color on the street, and Spook found himself staring. He tore his eyes away and continued to maneuver, for the citizen was not his goal. Beldra stood to the side, as usual.
always watching but never interacting. The citizen was so dynamic that his sister was easily forgotten. Spook understood that feeling quite well. He let a soldier jostle him, pushing him out of the citizen's way. That jostle placed Spook right next to Beldra. She smelt just faintly of perfume. I thought that was supposed to be forbidden. What would Kelsier have done? He'd have attacked, perhaps, killing the citizen. Or he'd have moved against the man in another way. Kelsier wouldn't have let such terrible things happen. He'd have acted. Perhaps he would have tried to make an ally out of someone trusted by the citizen? Spook felt his heart, always so much louder to him now, beat faster. The crowd began to move again, and he let himself get shoved up against Beldra. The guards weren't watching, they were focused on the citizen, keeping him safe with so many random elements around.
"Your brother," Spook whispered in her ear. "You approve of his murders?"
She spun, and he noticed for the first time that her eyes were green. He stood in the crowd, letting it shove him away as she searched, trying to figure out who had spoken. The crowd, following her brother, carried her from Spook. Spook waited, being jostled in the sea of elbows for a short time. Then he began to maneuver again, pushing through the people with subtle care until he was again beside Beldra.
"You think this is any different from what the Lord Ruler did?" he whispered. "I once saw him gather up random people and execute them in the Luthadel City Square."
She spun again, finally identifying Spook among the moving crowd. He stood still, meeting her eyes despite the blindfold. People moved between them, and she was carried away. Her mouth moved. Only someone with the enhanced senses of Tin could have seen with enough detail to make out the words on her lips.
"Who are you?"
He pushed his way through the crowd one more time. The citizen was apparently planning to make a big speech up ahead, capitalizing on the increasingly large crowd. People were bunching up around the podium that lay in the middle of the market. It was getting more difficult to move through them. Spook reached her, but felt the crowd pulling him away again. So he reached between a pair of bodies and grabbed her hand, pulling her wrist as he moved with the surgings of the crowd's motion. She spun, of course, but she didn't cry out. The crowd moved around them, and she turned to meet his blindfolded eyes through the throng. "Who are you?" Beldra asked again. Though he was close enough to have heard her had she spoken, no sound escaped her lips. She just mouthed the words. Behind her, on the podium, her brother began to preach.
"I'm the man who will kill your brother," Spook said softly.
Again, he had expected a reaction from her, a scream perhaps, an accusation. His actions here had been impulsive, born from his frustration at not being able to help the people who were executed. If she did scream, he realized, it could bring his death. Yet she remained silent, flakes of ash falling between them.
"Others have said that same thing," she mouthed. "Others were not me." "And who are you?" she asked a third time. "The companion of a god, a man who can see whispers and feel screams. A man who thinks he knows better for this people than their own chosen ruler," she mouthed. "There will always be dissenters who balk at what must be done."
He still held her hand. He gripped it tightly, pulling her close. The crowd crowded the podium, leaving her and Spook at their rear, like shells left on a beach by the retreating waves.
"I knew the survivor, Beldra," he whispered harshly. "He named me, called me friend. What you've done in this city would horrify him, and I'm not going to let your brother continue to pervert Kelsier's legacy. Bring him warning if you must. Tell Quellian that I'm coming for him."
The citizen had stopped speaking. Spook glanced up, looking toward the lectern. Quellian stood upon it, looking out over his crowd of followers. looking at Spook and Beldra, standing together at the back of the crowd. Spook hadn't realized how exposed they had become.
"You there!" the citizen cried. "What are you doing with my sister?"
Damn, Spook thought, releasing the girl and dashing away. However, one major inconvenience of the street slots was their high, steep walls. There were very few ways to get out of the market, and those were all being watched by members of Quellian's security forces. At the citizens' shouted command, soldiers began to dash forward from their posts, wearing leather and carrying steel. Fine, Spook thought, charging the nearest group of soldiers. If he could get through them, he could reach a ramp up, perhaps disappear into the alleys between buildings above. Swords scraped from scabbards. Behind Spook, people cried out in shock. He reached into the ragged tears of his cloak and whipped forth his dueling cane. And then he was among them. Spook wasn't a warrior, not really. He'd trained with Ham, of course. Clubs had insisted that his nephew know how to defend himself. However, the crew's true warriors had always been their Mistborn, Vin and Kelsier, with Ham, as a pewter arm, providing brute force if necessary. Yet Spook had spent a lot of time training lately, and while doing so, he discovered something interesting. He had something that Vin and Kelsier could never have had, a blurring array of sensory knowledge that his body could instinctively use. He could feel disturbances in the air, sense tremors in the floor, and could know where people were simply by how close their heartbeats sounded. He was no Mistborn, but he was still very dangerous. He felt a soft wind, and knew a sword was swinging for him. He ducked. He felt a footstep on the ground, and knew someone was attacking from the side. He stepped away. It was almost like having Atium. Sweat flew from his brow as he spun, and he cracked his dueling cane into the back of one soldier's head. The man fell. Spook's weapon was crafted of the finest hardwood. But just to be certain, he brought the butt of the weapon down on the fallen man's temple, knocking him out of the battle for good. He heard someone grunt beside him, soft yet telling. Spook whipped his weapon to the side and smacked it against the attacking soldier's forearm. The bones broke, and the soldier cried out, dropping his weapon. Spook rapped him on the head. Then Spook spun, lifting his cane to block the third soldier's strike. Steel met wood, and the steel won, Spook's weapon breaking. However, it stopped the sword strike long enough for Spook to duck away and grab a fallen warrior's sword. It was different from the swords he'd practiced with. The men of Urto preferred long, thin blades. Still, Spook only had one soldier left. If he could cut the man down, he'd be free. Spook's opponent seemed to realize that he had the advantage. If Spook ran, it would expose his back to attack. However, if Spook stayed, he'd soon be overwhelmed. The soldier circled warily, trying to stall for time. So Spook attacked. He raised his blade, trusting in his enhanced senses to compensate for the difference in training. The soldier raised his weapon to parry as Spook swung. Spook's sword froze in the air. Spook stumbled, trying to force the weapon forward, but it was strangely held in place, as if he were trying to push it through something solid rather than air. It was as if someone was pushing against it. Allomancy. Spook glanced desperately around him and immediately found the source of the power. The person pushing had to be directly opposite Spook, for allomancers could only push away from themselves. Quellian, the citizen, had joined his sister. The citizen met Spook's gaze, and Spook could see effort in the man's eyes as he clutched his sister, using her weight for support as he pushed against Spook's sword, interfering in the battle as Kelsier himself once had long ago when visiting the caverns where his army trained. Spook dropped the weapon, letting it fly backward out of his hands, then threw himself to the ground. He felt the draft of an enemy sword swinging overhead, narrowly missing him. His own weapon clanged to the ground a short distance from him, its ringing loud in his ears. He didn't have time to gather his breath. He could only push himself up to dodge the soldier's follow-up blow. Fortunately, Spook wasn't wearing any metal that Quellian could push against to influence the fight any further. That was a habit that Spook was glad he'd never lost. The only choice was to run. He couldn't fight, not with an Allomancer interfering. He turned while the soldier prepared another swing. Then Spook threw himself forward, getting inside the soldier's guard. He ducked under the man's arm and dashed to the side, hoping to run past and leave the soldier confused. Something caught his foot. Spook spun. At first, he assumed that Quellian was pulling on him somehow. Then he saw that the soldier on the ground, the first one he'd dropped, had grabbed his foot.
"I hit that man in the head twice," Spook thought with frustration. "There's no way he's still conscious."
The hand squeezed his foot, yanking Spook backward with an inhuman strength. With strength like that, the man had to be a thug, a pewter burner like Ham. Spook was in serious trouble. Spook kicked, managing to break free, then stumbled to his feet. But a thug would have the power of pewter. He'd be able to run faster and farther than Spook.
Two Allomancers, counting the citizen himself, Spook thought. Somebody isn't as disdainful of noble blood as he claims.
The two soldiers advanced on him. Yelling in frustration, hearing his own heart thump like a pounding drum, Spook threw himself at the thug and grappled the man, taking him by surprise. In that moment of confusion, Spook spun him around, using the thug's body like a shield to protect himself from the third soldier. He hadn't counted on the citizen's brutal training. Quellian always spoke of sacrifice and necessity. Apparently, this philosophy extended to his soldiers, for the man with the sword rammed his weapon straight through his friend's back, piercing his heart and driving the weapon directly into Spook's chest. It was a move only a man with the strength and precision of a thug could have performed.
Three Allomancers, Spook thought, dazed, as the soldier tried to pull his sword free from two bodies. The body of the dead man was a weight that finally snapped the blade. How did I survive even this long? They must have been trying not to reveal their powers, trying to remain hidden from the population.
Spook stumbled backward, feeling blood on his chest. Oddly, he didn't feel pain. His heightened senses should have made the pain so powerful that it hit. Everything went black.